Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Meanwhile, throughout the week, every day, Monday through Friday and more, because, well, YouTube and the world never stops. My guy, Jay Retcher, who does a tremendous job. And as I mentioned, I've gotten to know the guys at, from Tampa at the Army-Navy game over the last 4 years. And we didn't get to hook up this past time because of some circumstances. But I got to see him week one in Tampa at Raymond James Stadium. I think we may have had a little Bananas Foster at halftime together. I'm not sure. But my guy Jay is with us here from Tampa. You can check out the Jay Retcher podcast on YouTube. Just search up. And it's spelled R-E-C-H-E-R. You can subscribe, you could listen, you could see our segment together, you could see all sorts of coverage of the Tampa Bay sports scene, and of course the Buccaneers. What's up, Jay? How are you, pal?
I'm good, my friend. I don't listen. I've been here in the Tampa Bay area covering sports for over a decade now. I learned very early on, man, that Bananas Fosters could be a killer. So from now on, I just stand about 5 feet away and I just look down the brow of my nose. I look down the peak of my nose and I just look at these people. How dare you enjoy this, you gluttonous people.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, see, here's the thing. If I lived down there and if I was at RJ Stadium, you know, 10, 12 times a year, however many times, you know, I'd have to probably bypass it. But the one time I was down there, I couldn't walk away from it. So anyway, either way, first of all, appreciate you making some time for us. I know you're a busy dude. You just got off from your podcast and all of that. And you know, of course, we did something together earlier this week, so people can go check that out. I put up a portion of it on IG and all that stuff. People can check that out as well. So give me big picture, the sense, because the Buccaneers – we know they're an explosive offense. We know they're a blitz-heavy defense. We know they've got a ton of injuries still on the back end. We'll get to all of that. But we also know this. You know, it doesn't seem like they garner this great level of respect for having won the NFC South, what, 5 years in a row now, and for being a division champion and for being a home team, at least in this matchup. People go look and say, well, the Commanders' record is better. Well, why should I fear them? So is that the sense that you kind of get from, you know, talking to Tampa fans, or are they pretty optimistic about this particular matchup?
Well, it's a two-part question or two-part answer, because I think a lot of people from the outside looking in look at the overall record for the NFC South and they argue that they're one of the worst divisions in all of football. So it's almost the best of the bad teams. But yeah, I mean, they've made the playoffs 5 years in a row, division champs 4 years in a row, three of those division titles under Todd Bowles. And yeah, I think inside of Tampa, there still is, you know, people that the jury's still out on Todd Bowles. They wonder, you know, should the Buccaneers move on from him if the Buccaneers don't come out on top on Sunday? They're worried about Liam Cohen possibly going to greener pastures as the head coach somewhere else. But, yeah, there's a lot of good confidence when it comes to the Bay Area about the team as a whole. And you guys get this now, too, with the Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn. And, like, there's something to be said about vibes. I know they're intangible, and I know you may not be able to quantify it with a number, but there's just something about a feel-good factor where you have confidence that if your team makes it to the dance, you make it to the playoffs, that you got a shot, you got an opportunity to do something. And, you know, coming off of last year's year where they were able to win the division again, beat the Eagles in the playoffs, and then this year ending the regular season, not only with a win against one of their rivals in the New Orleans Saints, but Mike Evans getting 1,000 yards for the 11th straight season. They're getting healthier, it looks like, so they may be as healthy as they've been maybe all year long outside of the big-time injury to a guy like Chris Godwin. But yeah, I mean, the vibes and how people look at this team, it's a lot different. And it's kind of ironic. Again, you know, you guys know there with just a change in leadership, how mm-hmm. you could view this team much differently. And this team led by some of their big stars, including their all-pro left tackle, Tristan Wirfs. I mean, the people here in the Bay Area look very favorably here on the Buccaneers.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned Wirfs, and he probably gets as little mention because of all the weapons and all that. But that offensive line, I mean, the tape that I've watched and watching the Buccaneers throughout the year, and granted, I don't get to watch them like you do. I mean, they are not. I don't know if you would call them pile movers, but they are people movers. And if they get that zone run attack and the cutback lanes and the backside runs for Bucky Irvin, I think that's where they, you know, really, 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 really can control a lot of this game. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it all anchors with Tristan. I mean, with today him being named the All-Pro left tackle,
right.
First player in NFL history to be first-team All-Pro at right tackle and left tackle. And then you look at the infusion of youth. Graham Barton, rookie center, has done a really good job. Cody Mouth, the right, at guard. And then you have Luke Getteke, who went from left guard a couple years ago to right tackle. You never see this, Chris. You never see mm-hmm. guys go from the inside out. We see it all the time in college. A guy's a tackle in college, then he moves to the inside, plays guard. You never see that.
Go from guard to tackle. Yeah.
You never see that, nor do you see a guy go from one side of the line to the other. This guy
went
from left guard to right tackle. It is really one of the most astonishing things that you're going to see from an offensive lineman that doesn't get nearly talked about enough, because his best friend is Tristan Wirfs, who's probably the best tackle on the planet. But those guys, combined with Liam Cohen and his intelligent play calling, you look at the difference between last year, where it's very vanilla with Dave Canales, and now the pre-snap motion and the abilities for the tight ends to come in and block. They've made such a huge improvement in just 12 months. You're talking about a team that was last in the league back-to-back years with Byron Leftwich and Dave Canales as the offensive coordinators, 32nd in the league, now fourth in rushing this year under Liam Cohen. It has to do with Bucky Irving, has to do with the play calling, and it has to do with the guys that are blocking. The tight ends, yes, doing a much better job, but this offensive line that is got great chemistry and continuity. They love Baker Mayfield because he's one of the guys. It's a very special group here, the Bucs offensive line, that doesn't get nearly talked about enough.
No doubt. That's a good breakdown. Let me ask you some injury things, because we know Jordan Whitehead is gone, and you know, obviously that's a whole different ball of wax. But it looks like you're going to get Antoine Winfield Jr. back. He's been full go in practice. Cade Otton was full go yesterday after being limited tight end. Let me see here. The other one I wanted to ask you about was Jamel Dean's been limited both days. Levante David went from limited to full. So like you said, they are getting healthier. You expect all of those guys to play? Any sense, any guesses on your end?
Yeah, I think everybody's going to play. The one guy that may not, from what I'm hearing, is Cade Otton, but it looks like he's trending towards playing. I think out of all the guys that you would need, they filled in pretty admirably without Cade Otton. You've had second-year man Peyton Durham coming up with some big grabs. He had a touchdown last week. And Devin Culp, a guy that was a rookie this year, came out of Washington. You look at how many Washington offensive players were drafted this year, with Penix and Odunze and Jalen Polk up in New England. And the Buccaneers have Jalen McMillan. But Devin Culp has come with some big catches the last couple of weeks. So I think they'll be okay if Cade Otton can't go. There's another Washington guy. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Antoine Winfield Jr. I mean, you're talking about another all-pro type player. Even when he wasn't hurt this year, Chris, he hasn't been at that all-pro level, but he has got the knack. I mean, if you've been watching football for the last couple of decades, you remember his dad and how opportunistic he was there with Minnesota. This guy is just a gamer. He's a lifer. He's got a smile that you can see through his helmet. So, yeah, Jamel Dean's a big guy on the outside. He's a guy that loves to tackle in space. Sometimes he does get beat over the top. So I know you and I were talking about De'Ami Brown on the outside. That maybe something to be cognizant of, because that's something that does hurt Jamel Dean. But yeah, if you get those guys back, especially Antoine Winfield Jr., that's the guy right there. If you're talking about interceptions, forced fumbles, a guy that can really take the game into his own there in the secondary, Antoine Winfield Jr., number 31 is a guy to keep an eye on.
Yeah, here's something for you, Jay. I'm so damn old, I covered Antoine Winfield's dad. I mean, that's how old. Exactly. Yes, he was. He was a hit stick, no doubt about it. And by the way, I guess Todd Bowles has made it official that Winfield and Jamel Dean will play, and that Otten is trending in the right way, I guess is the quote that I'm looking at here. So certainly that is bad news for Washington, good news for Tampa Bay. But, you know, I mean, of course, you got to play the game and if they can execute. All right, let me ask you this. Bowles is always known as a big-time blitzer. We all know that. They blitzed a healthy amount in week one. Jaden, you know, he did not have a good passing day that day. It was his first NFL game on the road, so on and so forth. But he did break off 16 for 82 on the ground, two rushing touchdowns, one kind of in garbage time. When the numbers and all the metrics say they've even cranked up the blitz even more since all these injuries, which is unusual to some degree. But do you expect them to blitz as much as they have been blitzing, or do you expect them to blitz and blitz a good amount, but maybe not as much, knowing that if you turn your back to Jaden Daniels, he can hurt you like he did at times in week one?
The one great thing about Todd Bowles is because he's been around this league for so long, and one thing you really enjoy watching him as a play caller is, Chris, he may do something on Sunday that we haven't seen all year long. I mean, he came out last year in the game against the Eagles, and he played Zion McCollum, their third cornerback at safety. And the Eagles were like, what? That wasn't on tape anywhere.
Yeah.
So Shaq Barrett's going to be back again. I mean, we don't know how much he's going to play. What a great story for him. Does he come in as Todd's crazy, man? He'll have Vita Vea, a guy that's just unbelievable in the middle of that defense, and he'll put him out like in the flat to cover your tight end.
He'll drop him out into space. Yeah,
it's so strange. I mean, the primetime game a couple of weeks ago against Dallas, unfortunately, the Buccaneers lost that game. Rashad White fumbled, but the third down stop came when Jake Ferguson got out in the flat and Vita Vea ran him down. And tackled them to force the punt to give the Buccaneers a chance to tie or win the game. So that's the crazy thing with Todd Bowles. You can watch him for every single snap like I have the last couple of years, and then he can come out on Sunday and he'll have maybe a spy on him, right? Maybe a spy on him like Shaq Barrett will be playing in the middle field somewhere. Maybe Antoine Winfield Jr. will be lining up like on the outside for the first half of the plays. Like, you just don't know. And if we don't know and we watch it all the time and these guys have the tape, like, it's going to be crazy. And the thing is, with Todd Bowles against rookie quarterbacks over the last couple of years, like, he does such a good job of like, all right, we're going to give you this, but they're the iconic bend but don't break defense. So, yeah, he may be able to run down the field, but this Buccaneers D, even saw it last week, didn't play great in the first half against Spencer Rattler and the Saints. They gave up four scoring drives. But, Chris, four scoring drives, only 16 points because they were able to force three field goals. So they kind of hang their hat on that. And when you have an offense with Baker Mayfield and Liam Cohen putting the ball in the end zone like that, I think you can deal with that. That's why I think in the first half of this game, I think it's going to be a little bit more even, and I think Todd kind of looks at it. It's almost like a boxer or an MMA fighter in the first rounds where it's a little slow. That's what Todd does. He kind of looks at it. He'll play soft. He'll kind of give you, all right, you're going to try this, you're going to try this, and then the second half comes out. The guys play it with a little more intensity, and then things change up, and that's why the Buccaneers have only given up 9 points in the last 5 weeks in the second half. They do a great job, even if it's not necessarily – technical adjustments, but just playing with a little more ferocity and a little bit more intensity. I mean, that's really paid dividends for the Bucs this year.
My guy, Jay Retcher. You can check out the Jay Retcher podcast on YouTube and wherever else you get it. Does a great job covering Tampa Bay sports and more. He's on top of it all over the place. And he's damn handsome too. I wish I was as handsome as you. But you
in the mail, buddy.
But you said it all. Speaking of red zone and bending but not breaking, what's interesting is that's how the Commanders are going to have to survive defensively in this game. And I just don't know if they're going. Like I point out, that's how they survived against Dallas. Well, a big difference: Trey Lance and no CeeDee Lamb versus Mike Evans, Jalen McMillan, Bucky Irving, and Baker Mayfield. Now, the one area that you know, I don't think I threw this out there, but the Bucs are 66.7% in terms of getting touchdowns in the red zone, fourth in the NFL. The Commanders are 63.4% in terms of getting touchdowns in the red zone. So this game ultimately could be decided, again, inside the 20, as many games are. But the question that I had for you, Jay, is, you know, when you watch Baker Mayfield, Sometimes you'll see just a brilliant surgeon. And then sometimes you'll see him throw up all over himself. What usually happens to create some of those turnovers? Is it just he thinks he can whistle one in into a tight window that he shouldn't? Is it pass rush pressure? Is there any way to put a finger on, like, why sometimes Baker, for all of the good things he does, has these meltdowns, and they do seem to come a pretty fair amount inside the red zone?
Yeah, and I think we've seen them less over the years. I think that was something that he really had to kind of deal with, you know, early on in his career as a guy that was just trying to do a little bit too much. And I think this year a lot of that happened when when you lose Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Like, how many teams are going to be able to lose the caliber of receivers that he lost and not want to feel like, hey, I got to put this a little bit more on my back? It hasn't happened with as much, I think, frequency. I mean, you look at it. He did throw 16 interceptions, which is probably a little bit too high for him. He threw 41 touchdowns and threw for 4,500 yards, too. So part of that kind of is like, yeah, it comes with the territory. The big thing with me with Baker in this situation is, yeah, I'm not necessarily worried about him turning the football over, because I feel like with the emergence of Bucky Irving and not having to worry about getting Mike Evans the record, he's going to be able to function within the offense again. And something to be cognizant of, and I was just having this conversation before, Baker has done a really good job of scrambling on third down for first down. He ran for 378 yards this year, which is a lot for a guy that, I mean, there's not a ton of design runs for Baker Mayfield. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not Josh Allen. But 378 yards is a pretty high total for a guy that's a pretty, you know, he's a pocket passer. And, you know, he's run for three touchdowns this year. So that's something to also be aware of.
Well, Jay, not to jump in on you, but just to extend that point, remember when I saw you last in week one in Tampa, part of the story in that game is the Commanders were able to get initial pressure and beat some of their blocks, but they could not close the back door, and Baker would extend plays, or he would make some plays by, you know, using his legs and breaking them down that way, but more extending plays and then being able to throw off of that play extension or off of the leg extension.
Exactly. And I think now when you don't have as many guys, that, like, he can make those plays, but now he's not, all right, I'm going to make those plays, I'm going to throw to the middle of the field. Or I'm not make turn on the outside and try to throw them all the way down the field. One of the biggest plays of the year, and I think it was New Orleans, they ran this double reverse flea flicker looking thing, and there was nobody open downfield, and Baker checked it down to Kate Otten. And it got him like 17 yards and a first down, but it was just, at times you could see the growth in a player like in one play. And he wanted to. He was looking. He was like, oh, I'm going to chuck this thing 50 yards down the field. But he was like, I'm just going to check this down. I know this wasn't what the play was drawn up to, but let's get it to Kate Otten to get 17 yards. They end up moving the football down the field to get a first down. They end up getting a touchdown, and they go on to win that game. So a lot of maturity for Baker Mayfield. And I know Tampa Bay is really counting on the experience of him and a lot of other players on this team Sunday night.
You know, you reminded me, I mean, it's such a long NFL season, and there's so much that goes on. You know, I had a caller screaming at me because I'm leaning towards picking the Bucs, right, in a close game. You know, how dare I, right? You know, the Commanders won 12 games in the Buccaneers, so they're clearly better. The Buccaneers not only had just an absolute poop ton of injuries on defense, but they didn't have Mike Evans for, what, was it 4 or 5 games? And they haven't had Godwin for the last 8 or 9.
Right. And then let's not forget, the first time these two teams played, we didn't really see much of Bucky Irving.
Yeah.
And he for a lot of fantasy football owners out there won their league, myself included, because of Bucky Irving this year. 1,500 total yards, all purpose. I mean, the guy's just an absolute freak. But, I mean, look at this Buccaneers team, and I know a lot of people are like, all right, well, you know, look at their division. I mean, look at the games they won, though. I mean, they beat Detroit in Detroit. A lot of people think the Lions are going to be the team representing the NFC in the Super Bowl, and the Buccaneers went in there and beat them, right? I mean, they beat the Eagles.
They hammered the Eagles.
They went to L.A. You want to talk about a defensive performance, you go watch the second half of that game against the Chargers. Jim Harbaugh was waving the white flag at the end of that
good
game.
Call.
They took Justin Herbert out of the
game. They took
him out of the game. They were like, this ain't working. There's no sense. We're not coming back. So it is frustrating here in the Tampa Bay area, because then you look at it, you're like, all right, dude, you're giving up 16 points. It's the Rattler in the first half. So there is a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde to it. But, I mean, that's the crazy thing about this Buccaneers team. They may be the biggest wild card in all the playoffs because – could they lose the game against Washington? Maybe, because Jaden Daniels is a great player. Terry McLaurin, they have the veterans. They have veteran coaching staff. We all love Bobby Wagner here, and Dan Quinn, of course, his time in Atlanta, we know him. But, I mean, this Buccaneers team, they're not scared of anybody, and they've proven that they can go toe-to-toe. Let's not forget, the week after they lost Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, they went to Kansas City and took the Chiefs to overtime, right? I mean, it's crazy. Ryan Miller, I mean, this seventh wide receiver caught a pass to tie the game. So there is no look of this Buccaneers team of like, hey, we're better than anybody. But, Chris, I got to tell you, man, they are not scared of anybody, and they realize, like, hey, if we play our game, why not us?
My God, Jay, I appreciate you so much for doing this. I wish we had more time. I could talk to you all day. You know what I think of you and all of you guys down there that I've been so lucky enough to meet through the Army-Navy stuff, and then we've become, you know, colleagues and pals and friends, and we've had some great times. You know, listen, I'll just say this. You know, we're in a tough business, right? So if anybody wants some high quality radio hosts, Jay, Zach, you know, the guy, I mean, John, you know, who runs things behind the scenes, I call him Rock, John, whatever, you know, all of those guys down there in Tampa, just tremendous people and great radio hosts and great radio people. So, Jay, as always, I appreciate you, brother. Sorry I can't make it down there, but we will definitely see each other soon, and we'll definitely keep in touch. Best of luck to the Buccaneers. You know, hopefully it goes the Washington way, and we can talk again about something else. But, you know, we'll figure out a way.
I appreciate you, buddy, and enjoy the Ovechkin goal count, because you know me, being a big hockey guy, I got my eye on that.
You are a big hockey guy, and that we got to get you back on when the Bolts are coming up here, or when the Caps are back down there. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate you, bud.
All right, pal. Talk soon. Thanks.
All right, that is Jay Retcher. Again, the Jay Retcher Podcast. Find it on YouTube and more. Does a great job. He's all over it, and he is a big hockey guy, no doubt about it.